When you think of tech startups in America, for most of us, it all happens in California, Silicon Valley. But the geography of U.S. innovation is shifting, with many of the newest startups setting up in the rural South and some states better known for cattle ranching and cowboys rather than data centers.
So west of the Mississippi, Wyoming, Montana, Idaho, and then surprisingly, the southeastern states, South Carolina in particular, Georgia, and even parts of Mississippi, Florida. So I'm Swati Bhatt. I'm on the faculty here at Princeton University. And my research, current research, is focusing a lot on entrepreneurship and the startup boom in the United States in recent years.
Bhatt's research has uncovered a new generation of tech innovators who want to combine their computer savvy and entrepreneurship with a different kind of lifestyle.
These young folks are figuring that, you know, so long as they keep up their contacts with the necessary people around the country, they can then set up shop in rural areas with more space and the freedom to do business in a less restrictive environment.
Swati Bhatt's article on the new geography of American startups is featured in the September edition of Finance and Development magazine. She sat down with journalist Rhoda Metcalf to talk about her research.
What is it that attracts these new tech startups into southern states like Georgia and South Carolina? I mean, why do they go there?
By and large, a favorable business climate, which would mean favorable tax laws, low corporate tax rates. And when I say pro-business climate, I also mean low unionization rates, low regulation. And I think one of the drivers is in-migration, which is migration into these states by people who are just fed up of the high housing costs in the areas formerly associated with the tech growth.
Right.
For example, you know, parts of California, it's just become simply unaffordable. The migration is being driven by millennials and Gen Z. And so these are the people with young kids, growing families. They need the space. They've got the skills and they have the computer and they have the Wi-Fi. So why would they want to live in a cramped one-bedroom studio in the middle of San Francisco?
Right, right.
Cheap housing tends to be a factor that is rather important.
Sure. The southern states have also been fairly strategic in the kinds of economic incentives they've offered as well, right?
Well, they've offered not just, tax incentives, mm-hmm. but they're actually giving out loans, targeted loans to new businesses.
Right.
Practicing pretty strong industrial policy here.
You point out in your paper that Wyoming is a very kind of quintessential example of this phenomenon because it has become, surprisingly enough, a top destination for startups. Why is that?
So Wyoming is rather unique because it's got no corporate tax, no personal income tax, low startup fees, and low crime, very limited gun control. If you think about it, the outdoors, you know, the ability to go out hunting, hiking, mm-hmm. and the lack of restrictions is appealing to a large number of people.
It's just funny that you throw in low gun control along with all these other economic considerations. Do you think that that's really a factor?
Just from the perspective of, in individual stories, this shows up when I was looking through the newspaper articles out of Wyoming, mm-hmm. out of Laramie, Wyoming. There were interviews with individuals where why did they move from California to Wyoming and set up their new firm there? And one of the points made was, well, there's no regulation, there's no gun control. And so individuals did mention that, which I found interesting because I think it's part of this package of low restrictions overall.
Right.
Limited government.
The low regulation environment.
Yes. I was born in India and I am familiar with the whole, license raj that has stymied the small business world, startup world in India. The fact that it takes so long to start a new business, even if you want to open a local pawn shop, you have to go through all these multiple steps. And this is something that the government in Wyoming likes to advertise, that we have no regulations and restrictions on entry. You want to start up your business? Go right ahead. And
we won't get in your way.
We won't get in your way. Exactly.
So do these companies, do we see companies setting up, you know, in a rural area on an individual basis, or does it happen in clusters? Do we see clusters of these companies?
So I've looked at the county level, and at the county level, for example, in Wyoming, you see a large concentration of startups around Jackson County and then around Laramie County. And so the story would go as, you know, the low taxes and the low regulations draws a lot of people in. And so there's one person who moves and makes the bold, takes that bold step. And then several others are going to follow once they see that, oh, wow, this is a good life.
If they succeed, if the first one succeeds.
Yes, yes. And then when your friends see that this is successful, maybe part of your own network of buyers and sellers might end up at your doorstep and say, hey, we might set up shop here because, you know, it's so much easier
and cheaper.
And then soon you've got this whole thriving community of individuals, transplants from other high cost areas that were just unpleasant, you know, with high housing costs, maybe some crime.
High school costs,
exactly.
But I also understand that from your paper that data centers play a role in this as well. I mean, can you explain what happens when a Google or Amazon build a data center out in Mississippi or Alabama?
So there are two requirements for these data centers. These are just huge, let's say, warehouses hosting large amounts of compute architecture and hardware.
Right.
And what they need is space for these warehouses. And they also need energy and water.
And water. Why do they need water?
Because the computers heat up very quickly and they need to be cooled down. So a lot of states are, one of the incentives they're providing, particularly in the Southeast, is access to cheap energy and also water.
And land, and fairly cheap land.
And fairly cheap land, exactly.
So when one of these data center is located somewhere, do they also attract other startups?
So that's one of the aspects that I'm looking at in my research, which is there an entrepreneurial ecosystem that's set up where the whole risk-taking attitude becomes a kind of a general feeling amongst individuals in a certain community? Hmm. You know, if you see your neighbor starting their own business and feeling comfortable with that level of risk, it would incentivize you to say, well, you know, I can do this too.
Right.
Starting a new business is a high risk, high reward setup.
Absolutely.
But on the other hand, if you've got a community of individuals who have a similar approach to risk, then you feel more comfortable with being amongst people who can, you know, talk about their fears and the way they deal with this risk.
But isn't there also a risk for startups in setting up in a place like rural Alabama instead of Silicon Valley in terms of getting investors on side? I mean, is it as appealing to an investor to put money into a startup that's hunkered down in a rural area versus another startup in a well-known dynamic hub of innovation like Silicon Valley?
It doesn't really matter where you're located so long as you've got this incredible network of connections as to who are the buyers? Who are the sellers? Who are in need of the product? Who are the ones who can supply the product? And to a lot, you know, let me give you an example of a new company in Jacksonville, Florida. Mm-hmm. This is just an intermediary company. And so they're connecting companies that use heavy duty equipment, excavators, right, around the world. And they're connecting them with contractors who actually work on these, repairing this kind of equipment. So basically, they're like a company with three employees and they're using technology, which is a vast network online of those in need of repairs, mm-hmm, and those who are able to contract their services out, the suppliers. Hmm. And so these intermediaries, because of technology, are able to locate anywhere. And you can communicate with the venture capitalists on Sand Hill Road anytime, picking up the phone, going on the internet, even on your mobile device.
Right.
And so the restrictions that were imposed, you know, maybe a decade ago are no longer as constricting.
Right, as long as you're getting the job done.
As long as you're getting the job done. It's like, exactly.
So you mentioned this one company that basically connects companies that need repairs. What other products do these startups in sort of these hinterregions, what kind of products are they producing?
So a lot of these professional services, payroll, legal back office work, administrative support work, management of companies, these are desk jobs.
Right.
And they can really be done anyway.
I mean, you can outsource them really easily.
That's right. Chances are if AI takes over, then literally it can be done in the cloud. So these startups tend to be have a low headcount.
Right.
Because you don't need that many people to do the back office work.
So I have to wonder, I mean, you say there's a fairly low headcount with these kinds of companies. In terms of the rural areas and these states, these, for example, the southern states that attract these startups, what do they get out of it? Does it lead to a boost in employment? I mean, what's the benefit to them?
So what the expectation is that this will act like a magnet for all the ancillary services. Hmm. And so it will attract the electricians and the plumbers and the bakers, the restaurant owners. And that will create a community of people that can't be replaced by AI. And the support structure for any of the large tech companies is huge. I mean, when I visited Facebook a few years ago, there are like 50 dining establishments around mm-hmm. in the Facebook. And so there are a lot of people providing the food, cooking the food, cleaning the place, providing other ancillary services.
But Facebook has a huge number of employees. These startups have a tiny number of employees. I mean, are they going to get that kind of benefit in this new trend?
That's a good question. Is there a strong agglomeration effect where one startup, you know, this entrepreneurial spirit becomes, you know, an ecosystem, is in fact strong enough to generate a robust community which draws in a lot more workers, more employment? It is a big question that may or may not happen.
Yeah. I mean, I guess the other question is, do these startups stick around for quite a few years, or is there a lot of turnover as well?
The survival rate among startups, the data show that it's not very strong.
Yeah.
The startups tend to survive maybe between 1 to 4 years, and then at 4 years, we see some drop off. But more recent data is showing a slightly more robustness around the 4 year mark.
Right.
But, you know, this is, it's all very, very recent. So
it's preliminary.
Yeah.
Which makes me wonder, sort of at the end of the day, do you think it's worth it for a low-income region, a state that is really trying to develop some more economic growth? You know, is it worth it for them to invest in attracting these tech startups?
I think these states are looking to just breathe new life into their communities.
Yeah.
And the sense is that, for example, let's take South Carolina. It's a very established culture. Charleston, South Carolina, has a whole history behind it.
Right.
And this may be an attempt to introduce new elements which would rejuvenate the local culture.
Right.
And add new elements which can build upon what they already... They did have strengths, and maybe can build upon those strengths. What is exciting is that, you know, any new technology, the diffusion of this new technology works in a neighborhood fashion. And so if one individual moves to, say, South Carolina, bringing it with him or her the new technology, other business owners in that community will see this and start adopting this new technology. So in a way, this migration and the growth of startups in new areas is promoting the diffusion of technology across the nation. And that is a good thing. A good thing in terms of, you know, economic dynamism for the nation is a very good thing.
How interesting. Are you going to continue to do work in this direction?
So I'm now looking into the details, which some of which I just mentioned to you, but what is happening at the county level? It's the intermediaries, but which intermediaries and how are they doing this?
Hmm.
In my first book, one of the points, I mean, I don't want to talk about my own work, but I just wanted to bring this up. You know, in economics, one of the costs of doing business is when you've got a middleman
sure.
who puts the buyers and the sellers together. And I argued in that book that now with the dawn of this internet age, where connectivity is so cheap and so constant, a buyer can contact a seller and make a transaction immediately. So you don't need the intermediaries. Well, the irony is that we've kind of come full circle where now we actually do need intermediaries, but we need intermediaries who've got this vast network of buyers and sellers. Right. It's kind of like the bazaar in the Medina in the old world, where everybody came to the same place. And so you could make trades very easily.
And you'd have a bigger selection of buyers.
Exactly.
And products.
That's exactly right. And so I think we've come full circle where if you've got a good intermediary who's got a wonderful a network of buyers and sellers, they can do their business very, very efficiently.
And that intermediary can be quite happily situated in rural Georgia.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, interesting. Well, this is a pretty fascinating view into what's happening with the startup world. Swati Bhatt, I really appreciate you coming on the podcast today and giving us some insights on it.
Thank you so much, Rhoda.
Again, that was Princeton University's Swati Bhatt speaking with Rhoda Metcalf. You'll find her article on the new geography of American startups in the September edition of Finance and Development magazine. Go to imf.org/FND. And look for other IMF podcasts on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. You can also follow us on X. Our handle is @IMF_podcast. I'm Bruce Edwards.
And I'm Rhoda Metcalf. Thanks for listening.